I'd been engaged in dialogue for 2 years with an imam from the Middle East, a gentle and seemingly moderate man. One day in the middle of our conversation, he turned to me and asked, "Why do you Jews need a land? After all, Judaism is a religion, not a country or a nation." I decided at that point to discontinue the dialogue. After all, there are 56 Islamic states and more than 100 nations in which the majority of the population is Christian. There is only one Jewish state, 1/25 of the size of France, roughly the same size as the Kruger National Park in South Africa. With those who believe that Jews alone among the nations of the world are not entitled to a land of their own, it's very difficult to hold a conversation. Yet the question is worth asking. There is no doubt, as D.J. Kleins explains in his book The Theme of the Pentateuch, that the central narrative of the Torah is the promise of and the journey toward the land of Israel. Yet why is this so? Why did the people of the covenant need their own land? Why wasn't Judaism, on the one hand, a religion that could be practiced by individuals wherever they happen to be, or on the other, a religion like Christianity or Islam, whose ultimate purpose is to convert or conquer the world so that everyone can practice the one true faith? The best way of approaching an answer is through an important comment of the Ramban on this week's parasha. Chapter 18 of Vayikra contains a list of sexual practices that are forbidden. And it ends with this solemn warning: "Do not defile yourselves in any of these ways, because this is how the nations that I'm going to drive out before you became defiled. The land was defiled, so I punished it for its sin, and the land vomited out its inhabitants. But you must keep my decrees and my laws. If you defile the land, it will vomit you out, as it vomited out the nations that were before you." Nachmanides asks the obvious question. Reward and punishment in the Torah are based on the principle of midah keneged midah, measure for measure. The punishment must fit the crime. So it makes sense to say that if the Israelites neglected or broke the mitzvot ha-teluyot ba'aretz, the commands that relate to the land, then the punishment would be exile from the land. So the Torah says, in the curses, in Bechukotai, all the time that it lies desolate, the land will have the rest it did not have during the Sabbaths you lived in it. Meaning that this will be the punishment for not observing the laws of Shemitah, the sabbatical year. Shemitah is a command relating to the land, therefore the punishment for its non-observance is exile from the land. But sexual offenses have nothing to do with land. They are mitzvot hatluyot baguf, commands relating to a person, not a place. Ramban answers by stating that all the commands are intrinsically related to the land of Israel. It's simply not the same to put on tefillin or keep kashrut or keep Shabbat in the diaspora as in Israel. In support of his position, he quotes the Talmud, which says whoever lives outside the land of Israel is as if he had no God, and the Sifrei that states living in the land of Israel is of equal importance to all the commandments of the Torah. The Torah is the constitution of a holy people in a holy land. Ramban explains this mystically, but we can understand it non-mystically. By reflecting on the opening chapters of the Torah and the story they tell of the human condition, and about God's disappointment with the only species, us, he created in his image. God sought a humanity that would freely choose to do the will of its creator. Humanity chose otherwise. Adam and Eve sinned. Cain murdered his brother Abel. Within a short time, the earth was filled with violence, and God regretted that he had ever made human beings on earth. He brought a flood and began again, this time with the righteous Noah. But again, humans disappointed by building a city with a tower on which they sought to reach heaven. And God chose another way of bringing humanity to recognize him, this time not by universal rules, though those rules remain, namely the covenant with all humanity through Noah, but by a living example, Abraham, Sarah, and their children. Now, in Bereshit chapter 18, the Torah makes clear what God sought from Abraham, that he would instruct his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord, la'asot tzedakah u'mishpat, doing what is right and just. Homo sapiens is, said Aristotle and the Rambam, a social animal, and righteousness and justice are features of a good society. We cannot live alone. And we know from the story of Noah and the Ark that a righteous individual on his own can save himself and his family, but not the society in which he lives, unless he transforms the society in which he lives. Taken collectively, the commands of the Torah are prescription for the construction of a society with the consciousness of God at its center. God asks the Jewish people to become a role model for humanity by the shape and texture of the society they build, a society characterized by justice and the rule of law, welfare and concern for the poor, the marginal, and the vulnerable, and a society in which all would have equal dignity under the sovereignty of God. Such a society would eventually win the admiration and the emulation of others. This is how Moshe Rabbeinu puts it at the end of his life: "See, I have taught you decrees and laws so that you may follow them in the land which you're entering to take possession of it. Observe them carefully. This will be your wisdom and understanding in the eyes of the nations who will hear about all these decrees and say, 'Surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people.' What other nation is so great as to have such righteous decrees and laws as this body of laws I'm setting before you today? A society needs a land, a home, a location in space, where a nation can shape its own destiny in accordance with its deepest aspirations and ideals." Now, Jews have been around for a long time, almost 4,000 years since Abraham began his journey. During that period, they have lived in virtually every country on the face of the earth under conditions good and bad, in freedom and under persecution. Yet in all that time, there was only one place on the surface of the earth where they formed a majority and exercised sovereignty: the land of Israel. A tiny country of difficult terrain and all too little rainfall, surrounded by enemies and empires. Only in Israel is the fulfillment of the commands a society-building exercise, shaping the contours of a culture as a whole. Only in Israel can we fulfill the commands in a land, a landscape, and a language saturated with Jewish memories and hopes. Only in Israel does the calendar track the rhythms of the Jewish year and the Jewish soul. In Israel, Judaism is part of the public square, not just the private, sequestered space of synagogue, school, and home. Jews need a land because they're a nation charged with bringing the divine presence down to earth in the shared spaces of our collective life, not least, as the last chapter of Achrayimos makes clear, by the way we conduct our most intimate relationships, a society in which marriage is sacrosanct and sexual fidelity is the norm. This message that Jews need a land to create their society has a message for Jews, Christians, and Muslims alike. To Christians and Muslims it says, if you believe in the God of Abraham, grant that the children of Abraham have a right to the land that the God in whom you believe promised them, and to which he promised them that after exile, they would return. To Jews, it says, that very right comes hand in hand with a duty to live individually and collectively by the standards of justice and compassion, fidelity and generosity, love of the neighbor and of the stranger. All those things alone constitute our mission and our destiny, a holy people in the Holy Land. Shabbat Shalom.